Hey, let's see, who do we have? We got Erica. Erica, good to see you. Hello. Welcome. Just getting things set up here, and we're going to get started in a couple of minutes. So here's an interesting question for you, Erica, and for others as they join us. If you could go back in time, what advice would you give your 22-year-old self? What's the first thing that comes to mind? Another way I've heard this question is if you could call yourself 20 years ago and you had 30 seconds on the call, what would you tell yourself? Oh, I love it. Quit that government job and start writing. That's great. Go hug your mama. Oh, I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. I would say for me, it would be relax, dude. It's all gonna work out. Would I have believed myself? So here's what I would have done, especially if I had 30 seconds. I would have told myself, don't say anything. This is you. And to prove it to you, here's what I know. And I would have said a couple of things that only I would know, just to prove to myself that it is me from the future. And then I would have kept my my advice super simple and then hung up. I would have needed some kind of authenticity token to just to shock myself and to prove that it was really me. We'd have to do something like that, right? So that's all assuming that we had time to plan for all this, right? Because most of the time it would be, okay, hurry up, you got to make up your mind. What would you say? But interesting question. Yeah, would you believe it? Would you have believed you? Hey, Patty, welcome. Good to see you. And I'm going to get to see you in person next week. This is awesome. Hey, Carrie. Carrie is on. Welcome. It's good to have you on board. So, guys, while we're waiting for others, you just got another minute or two. Just curious for fun, if you could go back in time, what advice would you give your 22-year-old self? If you have to say it in one sentence, just one thing, what would it be? I was telling Erica, mine would have been to chill out. I would say, chill out, dude. Everything's going to work out, believe me. Hers was quit that government job and start writing and go hug your mama. So a good mix of things here. Oh, hey, welcome, Anna. Hello. All right, don't be shy, guys. This is not, I promise this is not going to be graded. This is you just get bonus points if you play along. And welcome, Carrie. Great to have you on board. This is Carrie's first call. You're going to enjoy this bunch, Carrie. It's an awesome group of folks, very supportive. Kelly, hello. All right. And who else? And Joe, welcome, Joe. Good to see you here. Anna says, I would tell myself to forget all the boyfriends and traveled more or lived abroad. Ah, that's a good one. Especially the traveling part. I know, right? It's such a shame, when you have the time and the desire, you don't have the resources to travel the world. Although you could be very resourceful and see quite a bit of the world on just a few dollars a day. And then when you have the resources, you have the responsibilities that go with it, you know, with family and kids and work, and, you know, becomes a little bit more difficult. And it says, I had the resources, just the wrong priorities. Sounds like the boyfriends were number one. Well, hopefully one of those boyfriends ended up becoming your husband. Maybe not. Patty says, I would say follow your dreams faster. Yes. Good stuff. Good stuff. Just an interesting question. This is something that Tim Ferriss asks most of his guests in his podcast. And a better version, that, well, one that I like better than this, is if you could call your 22-year-old self and you only have 30 seconds to share something, what would you say? And that one is a little bit more dramatic. Carrie says, I would say love yourself first before trying to love others. Oh, so true. Great advice. Good stuff, guys. All right, so let's go ahead and get started. Hey, Paul, welcome. I know others are going to be joining us here, but we're going to go ahead and get started. And let's start, as usual, with wins. Would love for you to type in capital W in the chat area and just share a win that you've had over the past couple of weeks since our last time we connected. And just a reminder, a win can be anything, big or small. It doesn't have to be anything massive, monumental, just something you feel good about. Maybe you're making progress somewhere, you got an aha moment, you're starting to get clarity in a certain area. Maybe you feel good about a new habit that you're developing. Just let me know, let us all know, don't be shy. Very important that that you recognize your wins. One of the reasons I do this is, and I fall prey to this all the time, it's so easy to fall on the negative, on what's not going well, and then not pay attention to the things that are going well in your business and in your life. So let's start there. Anna says, have another book deal on the table and for 50% more than my last one. Fantastic. Congratulations. That's wonderful, Anna. It's great. Paul says, I've become more organized, better at planning. Man, that is a huge win, my friend. I know this is creating some space is been a top priority for you. So great to hear it. Kelly says, several people have been responding to my LinkedIn marketing. Fantastic. Way to go, Kelly. That's excellent news. Erica says, I've been working with an accountability partner from the Elevate Group, and I've boosted my productivity immensely. Oh, man. Great. Look at you, Erica. Great. Good stuff. All right. Anybody else? I know we got some good stuff out there. Jacob. Hey, Jacob, welcome. Secured a few new clients. Hey, congratulations, man. I know last time we talked, you're a little nervous on that front, getting much closer to where I was before the drop-off. Man, that was a quick recovery. Good for you, Jacob. Congrats. Patty says, follow-up meeting with client yielded bigger project with bigger price tag and more strategic partnership. Oh, I can't wait to hear about that one, Patty. Congrats. Excellent. Carrie says, referral from a current client. Way to go. Referrals are great, especially from happy clients who know, love, and respect you. Yeah, that's wonderful. Guys, love that. Good stuff. Let's hear from everybody on what they are working on right now. So in terms of your game plan, what is your main focus currently? Just type in P for project in the chat area and let me know what you're focusing right now. It could be going through some training, learning something new, or it could be deploying one of the strategies. We're developing a habit around prospecting, maybe revamping your positioning, really anything. Let us know what the focus is right now for you in terms of our work together. Anna is going through the marketing modules. Good. I know, Anna, you've been slammed with client work here in April, so it sounds like it's good to be back and get back into this. Hey, Hannah, welcome. Hannah is just got my new game plan. Excited to dig into that this week. Good stuff. Yeah, I was excited to put that together for you. Some really good things in there, and you're in a good place for those new things. So it was wonderful. Paul says, focus on Zone of Genius website and inbound. Excellent. Carrie is embarking on my new plan from Ed. Yeah. Good stuff. Erica is revising my web content to reflect my niche as discussed last call. Perfect. Sounds like you, and I know you may not be 100% yet, Erica, but you know, like I, suggested, hey, move on it. And, the clarity will come as you just get moving, right? That was the important part. Kelly is going through the content marketing multiplier module. Jacob has a win here. I've been working hard at warm email prospecting. I need to start going through the LinkedIn training. Okay. Joe says, rewriting my website copy to better explain to prospects what I do and why they should hire me. Great. And Joe, I saw that you had a good, if I remember correctly, a good aha there, which is wonderful. Patty is trusting the capacity tracker rather than my delusions. Yes. Trust the tool. We're not very good judges of what's available to us and how much time we got, right? Yeah. It's, as you can see, Patty, you're not alone. Trust the system. In fact, this is why I always say, I feel weird saying this, but I think you guys know where I'm coming from, is the capacity planner and scheduling your day, even if it's just general blocks, the time to do that is the night before or early in the morning when you're going to start work. Not literally early, but before you start work. The whole idea behind that is you want to make objective decisions when your mind is clear and not emotionally involved in the day. The moment you things start happening and you fall behind and this client wants to change something and then the emotions surface, that is not the time to make decisions. So the whole idea is you make these plans when your mind is clear, you're focused, you got clarity, and you can be objective about your plan. And then you write down your plan and then you go about the day following that plan. And when things get out of control and emotions run high, you remind yourself, nope, this is the plan. I got to stick to the plan. I made those decisions at a time when my mind is clear. My mind is not clear right now. Are there exceptions? Of course. But most cases, you want to trust the plan. Okay, good stuff, guys. So let's get to questions and discussions. And I know, Carrie, this is, I know you're new here, but we always start with wins, projects, and then we get to Q&A. And guys, as you know, the way to do this is if you got a question or you want to discuss something, type in a capital Q in the chat area and just give me an idea of what you'd like to discuss. You don't have to type in the whole thing. I can bring you in. I'll unmute you. The ground rules are very straightforward. Keep your questions focused and specific. The more specific they are, or the more focused they are, the better I can help you. One question per person. I can come back to you. I want to give everyone a shot here. And when applicable, just let me know when we talk what options you're considering. That way we can kind of narrow down the field of possibilities. It's an open floor right now. I didn't see any pre-submitted questions. And by the way, that's just a reminder. If you know you're not going to be on the call or you might be joining late or if you're not sure if you can be on the call, you can always pre-submit a question or two. And it's pretty straightforward on how to do that. You just go, each call has a page and there's a field right there where you can pre-submit questions. You can do this days in advance. You don't have to wait until the day of the call. If you're going to be on the call, I'd prefer if you just ask your question live so we can have some dialogue. You can always pre-submit it if you'd like, but it's better if we can just have a conversation instead. Okay, let's see. Got a few questions here. Anna wants to talk about following up. Absolutely. So, Anna, let me bring you in. Hey, Anna, how are you?
Hey, good, Ed. How you doing?
Doing well. Doing well. So let's talk. Following up.
Sure. So I've been trying this like cold emailing thing for, I don't know, 5 or 6 months. I read about it first in Jennifer Gregory's book, and then I know that you talked about it on the podcast and everything. So I've been trying to be really good about sending these letters of introduction at least like 5 a week. And I also got an email opening tracker to like see who's opening my emails and all of that. And I have found that this has added a severe level of anxiety to my life.
Okay. Tell me about that.
I see people open my email, and I think from all the emails that I've sent, I've maybe received 3 or 4 responses. Mm-hmm. Like the return rate is really, really, really low. And then, so I keep following up, but then I just like never know who to follow up with. Like if I've sent two emails and they never open it, like, is that the wrong email? Do I keep going? Do they just not want to read it? You know, or if they keep opening it and never write back, like how, at what point am I like, okay, well, you don't want this. Like, I just don't really have a method of figuring out like what to do when certain situations happen.
Gotcha. Okay. So, the first question is, have you gone through my warm email prospecting training?
Yes, I've been doing it this week. But I was looking at it this morning, but I don't think I saw anything, and I could have missed it, very well missed it, about like what to do with somebody who doesn't even open the email.
Gotcha. Yeah. We'll get there, but I wanted to make sure because my approach with email is a little bit different from Jennifer's. I don't really consider them letters of introduction because it's not, hey, how are you? Here's what I do. Let me introduce myself. And I'm not saying that's the exact script, you know, she recommends or teaches, but my approach is a little different. And it starts by talking about them. It's about them first. You're doing this.
Yeah, I've always done that. Like, that was the one thing that I didn't do from hers, was I've always taken the time to like really make it personal in hopes that they would respond.
Perfect. Yeah. Cool. So that's the first thing, because I mean, we can talk about follow-up, but if your approach is not optimal, then I would rather fix that first.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing. And just take a look at the scripts there. I find that it's easier to copy and then adapt it than it is to try to create your own. So sure. Follow those. My other thing is keep it to 125 words or less. That's one of the things that a lot of people say, okay, whatever, that's a suggestion. No, it's a rule. I have found that when it's 125 words or less, especially if you can get it to 100, it's a better email anyway. Mm-hmm. Because the whole idea is not to tell the whole story. The whole idea is to pique their interest enough to start a conversation. So just be mindful of that. And keep in mind, by the way, that when you use these templates, 80% of it can be reused. So it's the part that's got to be personalized is very small.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy to replace. Okay, in terms of follow-up, I find that it's better to have a rule with yourself at first. And you can refine it as you go. Because if you don't have a rule, you're right. The anxiety is going to creep up and you're going to be a nervous wreck. It's like, did I do the right thing? And then you're going to spend way too much time on some of them. Unnecessarily.
Right.
So my rule is basically this. You send out an email. If they respond, then, you know, you start the conversation. If they don't respond, I recommend sending another email to that same individual 1 or 2 weeks later.
Mm-hmm.
And that email, there's a very specific way that I show you in the training to do it, but you're basically digging up the original email you sent them and then adding something on top of it. Something like, I forgot to mention that, you know, I did this series of articles for, you know, whatever. Here's a link to them. I just, you know, I know that this is kind of right up your alley.
Right.
That's it. And Anna, you know, and then the reason that works so well is it creates a bit of a pattern interrupt. Most people would send a, hey, I sent you this a couple weeks ago. Just wanted to bring this back up to the top of your inbox. And you know, that's so self-serving. That's okay when you have a relationship, but when it's a cold prospect, that's the wrong approach. Instead, you give them something that's not even close to a percentage of the story. And then they're going to be confused, like, wait a minute, who is this? What's this about? And then they get to read the rest of it. Your original email is going to be below it. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's 1 or 2 weeks later. In terms of after that, it's up to you. The question I ask myself to determine if I should make one more follow-up is this a company or organization that I would really love to work with? You know, right. Or was it somebody I just happened to find and I'm just trying to meet my daily quota of 3 warm emails and, you know, it was kind of like a numbers thing.
Mm-hmm.
If it's the former, if you really want to work with them, then I think it's worth a second follow-up. And you could either do another email follow-up or you could take your original email, turn it into a letter, and snail mail the thing to the prospect. Okay. That's a little bit more work.
Yeah.
But again, that's why you have to ask yourself, is this somebody worth doing that to? If it was just somebody, you know, it sounded like a good prospect, but you know, it's not necessarily somebody I'd love to work with, then you stop there. Mm-hmm. And here's the reasoning behind that, Anna. Right now, you're just looking for numbers. You're trying to put things out there, and you're hoping that this message will reach that person at just the right time. But right. We all know that so much of this is about timing, right? That, mm-hmm. you know, you could keep following up, and it might be interesting, and it might be useful at some point, but that is not one of their 5 to 7 top of mind issues right now.
Yeah.
So, one thing that you may want to do is just forget it and just go to the next one, which is typically what I do. Or if there's fall somewhere in between, so they're not somebody you'd love to work with, but they're not somebody you necessarily want to abandon, set yourself a timer for another month or two, 30 to 60 days, and send the original warm email all over again to Bob, to that person. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's it. So, you understand the value of having these rules, right? They're objective.
Yes.
They're not emotional. And then you just know, I'm just going to follow these rules and I'm not going to get emotionally involved. And we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Right. The step to even send these cold emails was a really big one for me. To like feel like I wasn't bothering people or that they immediately hated me. They didn't respond. So it's been a struggle.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's a mental thing, and then of course I understand, and then you're sending them, and then if you don't get responses, then it can go back to that original feeling. I'm going to give you a baseline that you want to kind of keep in check. You want to see about a 5% positive response rate. When I say positive, the way I define positive is yes, let's talk. So you know they want to engage. Or yes, we sometimes work with outside writers. I don't have anything right now, so I'll keep your information in file.
Okay.
Anything other than a no response or a flat out no, never get lost, is a positive response. So 1 out of 20 is kind of average, and I would say even your minimum. So I say that because I don't know what your expectations were going into this. You said you sent out a bunch and you haven't gotten anything. I don't know how many you sent. I don't know how long it's been. And, you know, so I don't know what your response rate has been. Are you tracking that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, there was one day where like I sent 5 and 5 people responded like, thanks, but we don't have the budget right now. So that was kind of nice. But
okay.
Other than that, it's few and far between. And I find that 50% don't even open the email.
So let's address that. That's the final thing you had asked about in terms of what to do with those who don't open. I wouldn't worry about it.
Not email them again?
I'm saying I would just move on.
Okay.
And you could put them on that pile for, again, a month or two later.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that might help is to work up a little visual workflow for yourself.
Okay.
You know, kind of like a very simple flow chart that's got these rules.
Mm-hmm.
The value of that is not so much, oh, is this the right way? The value is the decision fatigue you avoid. You know,
right.
and you don't have to think about it. It's like, okay, well, I decided a while back when my head was clear that if there was no response, 30 days later, I was going to send the same email to the same person.
Mm-hmm.
Just one last time. And you just follow the process, you know. And I say that, the reason I'm saying you decide is honestly, it doesn't really matter. I've seen this work in just about every possible iteration that you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really hard to scientifically determine which method is better because these are not true scientific tests.
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. And I would say that if you, once you get the hang of it, let me know. I can point you to, I got a little bit of training on how to automate the follow-up
mm-hmm.
that I can point you to. And that can help save a lot of time. But I'd rather, just like with anything else, like, you know, they say, look, it's fine if you outsource your taxes, but you should do them for a couple of years just so you know what's under the hood.
Sure.
It's the same thing here, right? Just get used to it. You understand what's going on. And then I think a little bit of automation is okay.
I use HubSpot to, I created a template for the part that's like kind of the same every time. And so then I can just like type in my little template and then personalize it. So it does save some time. So I'm not typing the same thing over and over again.
Perfect. I like that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that works. I just, you know, you always think there's a secret magic formula. Just like people come to me for nutrition advice. They want me to give them that secret magic formula that's going to help them lose 30 pounds by next week, you know?
And that's the thing, right? Even in that world, everyone's different. I mean, how many people do you know who, I just stopped drinking sodas and I just lost 30 pounds last week. What?
I have a patient that lost 65 pounds in 2 weeks because he stopped drinking sodas.
Right? Isn't that crazy? And here I am. Pounds,
But all he did was stop drinking 2 liters of soda a day.
And how many people do you know who don't do any of those things? You know, they're eating right, and then they do the few things they're not doing, and they lose a pound a year, you know? Mm-hmm. So even in that world, I know that it's not an exact formula for everybody. Right. That's the frustrating part. With all these things, we're dealing with complex systems because humans are involved. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're just trying to, there are some proven principles here. At the end of the day, though, you really want to just try and optimize and just developing the habit is the most important for you right now.
Right.
The most important thing. Keep some basic stats just so you know, how you're doing. So you have a baseline and then to see if you're improving or not.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a good plan.
Cool.
Thank
All
you
right,
so
well,
much.
Keep us posted. Yeah.
You do.
You're welcome. All right, good stuff. Jacob has a question. Curious how you handle going after direct competitors, the clients I currently have. I have a few clients that I've hit an income ceiling with. Some of their competitors are bigger and I think have more funds. Since I'm very familiar with the subject matter, I'm wondering if there's a good way to test the waters as far as new clients go without dropping my current client immediately. Yeah. Can be a touchy thing. There are certainly some ways around it. Hey, Jacob, how are you?
I'm good, Ed. How are you doing?
Doing well. So I'm assuming that, you know, you ideally you'd like to keep your existing client or clients, but approach some of their direct competitors.
Yeah, so I have one client in particular, but I have a couple that, I'm not making like nothing. They're definitely, you know, decent clients and I enjoy working with them. But they are smaller in their industry. And so they just don't have the funds, to do everything that they want to do right now. They keep telling me that eventually they will, and then they want to, you know, do a lot more, but it hasn't happened yet. So anyways, I'm just curious cause I know the industry so well for, you know, working for them, with them for a while that, I don't know. I just might be able to make more by working with one of their competitors. But I also am not at a point where I want to just drop my current client. So
yeah,
I'm just wondering if there's kind of a little bit of a sticky situation, I guess.
Do you know if with the prospect, the bigger company, the competitor, is it direct? Are they a direct competitor in every way, or do they have different products and divisions? And so for instance, let's take an extreme example. IBM is a massive company with all kinds of different divisions. I could be working for somebody who does product information management and then still go after IBM. Doesn't mean I'm going to go after the product information management division of IBM.
Right. Yeah, so the competitors that I'm thinking of basically do the same exact thing. Some of the bigger ones do have different divisions, but their core business is still the same thing as my current client.
And they target the same customer base or the same target markets?
Well, actually, they do tend to go after different verticals. So they have, it's the same product, but, you know, one might target the hospitality industry, another might target a different industry more so. It doesn't mean they don't work with anybody that comes to them, but they do tend to target mainly different verticals like that.
Okay. All right. So, and you see where I'm going with this, right? It's the is there a direct, is there a possibility for an indirect opportunity?
Mm-hmm.
And one approach you could take is, you know, I wouldn't have the conversation with your current client yet. I would just test the waters, you know, pick one or two very strategically, and especially those that go after other vertical markets, not just your client, and then just approach them and just see, because I mean, this could be a couple of weeks. I mean, you could get an immediate response, but it could be months, or you could get a no.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't know until you try. And just start a conversation, and then see. And one thing you may want to ask is, and I think your prospect would appreciate this too, is if, let's say, the conversation goes really well and it escalates into working together on a few things, you may want to let your prospect know, you know, the only thing that that I can't do is I can't work with you directly on, you know, X product for the pharmaceutical industry. Or whatever, because, you know, my client ABC, that's what I do for them. And I find that I feel that it would be a conflict of interest. So I want to be respectful to them, respectful to you. And I think any good prospect would really respect that because they see that you're a person of integrity, you know.
Okay.
And let's just say that then they would understand and they're cool with that. That's the point when I would maybe approach my client and understand, you know, that you're talks with them, that it's probably looking like it might happen. However, here are the precautions that I've taken, and here's how I'm thinking about approaching this or doing this, and I can assure you X, Y, and Z.
Okay. When I'm contacting the new companies, would you recommend just telling them off the bat that I have experience in their area, their industry, or would you recommend actually citing who I've worked with before?
Yeah, it's a tough call. I wouldn't get into that level of specificity just in case it's actually a turnoff.
Right.
You know?
Okay.
And because I would want to have the conversation. And if the very first thing you tell them is that, then there's a chance that it won't even start the conversation. So give them enough to show them. No, I haven't just dabbled here. I know your business well.
Right. Okay.
And at least get an opportunity to be asked about that concern, if it is a concern for them.
Okay.
You know, so essentially what we're talking about, Jacob, is let's just, you know, go for it. Try to start some conversations. Let's see how far you can take it. Once it's starting to look really, really good, let them know what your limitations are.
Okay,
and
that
then
makes sense.
If they are cool with them, well, I mean, if they're cool with that and they understand, then go to your current client, have the conversation with them. And because at that point you haven't done anything, right?
Right.
You're kind of in a way getting their indirect blessing and just getting a feel for it. And let's just say they say, you know, Jacob, I appreciate that. Listen, we wouldn't be able to continue working with you if you did that.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing personal, but, you know, here's why. Then you can make a decision at that point.
Right.
And you haven't signed on with the new client anyway. But you're kind of in the middle at that point, and then you have to decide. But that's better than signing with a client and then going after your other client. I mean, that could just burn bridges and leave a bad taste. And above all, and you know this, it's just integrity is high integrity is the most important thing here.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, respecting and abiding by non-disclosure agreements and all that good
stuff. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's just one of those situations where it's like, you know, I feel like I might be able to, you know, just make more money and do better with another client. But again, like you were saying, I don't want to burn bridges or anything like that. So just wondering how to kind of navigate that. But what you said makes a lot of sense.
Perfect. Well, good luck. Let me know how that goes. It's
yeah, definitely
exciting. Thanks. Yeah, you bet. And that's cool. Cause I mean, that's something that if you haven't faced already, I mean, I know many of you guys in the call have, so it's, How to handle it is it's a combination of strategy and grace and, of course, integrity. Hannah, she says, can we talk through that client I need to let go of? It's been a recurring theme today, I think. You know, I got to let go of X client. I need to talk to you about it. Perfect. I love those discussions. Let me bring you in. Hey, Hannah.
Hey, Ed. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you. Cool. So, yeah, I read through your response yesterday. Why don't you give us, just for those who haven't seen it, maybe kind of the 30-second overview of where you are here.
Sure. Yeah. So I have this client that she was literally my very first freelancing client. And so we've been working together for 5 years, something like that, 4 or 5 years. And but we've come to the point, I think, where what she's willing to pay is no longer matching what I need to make. And I've renegotiated with her a couple times over the years, but last time we renegotiated, I knew that this was kind of like, this is it. Like, next time if I need to move up, then I need to move on, sort of thing. But that being said, it's not like she's a nightmare client. She has a lot of great systems. She's very organized. She's very communicative. So I didn't hate working with her. I think it's time to move on, and I just kind of need some help figuring out how to do so in a tactful way that, again, I'm not going to burn bridges. I'm not going to, leave her in the lurch either. But also, I can't refer her to another writer because of her rates. So that's kind of where I am.
And then you got, kind of a life situation coming up that you're wondering, I don't know if, well, I guess you posted about it, right? So it's okay for me to, So you're going on maternity leave roughly August 1st, and you want to send her an email to let her know, and you're hoping that in a way this becomes an opportunity for her to say, you know, we're going to have to move on, kind of thing, right? Because you're going to be out for 3 months.
Yeah, it was kind of like, so this is the thing where I've sort of been trying to plan maternity leave, which is an interesting problem to solve. And in a way, it's kind of, I'm finding that in my mind, it's like, it would be nice to have her waiting on the other side of maternity leave because she's always been there. And I think that's part of the reason why it's even been hard to let her go so far, because, as a freelancer, you get months that are amazing and then people go away, but it's like, she's always there. And there have been times where it was like, wow, I'm so glad I have her, at least it was something coming in, something to be working on. But at the same time, it's also like, or should I use this maternity leave as a way to be like, okay, I'm going on maternity leave, and actually this might be a good time to go our separate ways anyway. I don't know. What do you think about
it? Yeah, okay. So I think that the prudent thing is, well, here's the thing. Are you 100% sure it's time to move on and you just got to let her go, but your hesitation is that you feel bad?
Well, I suppose if I said to her, it's time to move on, and she said, and then she was like, okay, well, I really want to keep you on, so what can we work on? And she was willing to negotiate on rates to get it anywhere near reasonable. That would be, I'd be willing to do that. But if she is literally not going to budge on budget, then I just need to move on and not feel bad about it.
Okay. Now, let's just say you had the conversation today. Are you in a place right now where, that's cool. I can accept worst case scenario here, meaning that she decides to leave immediately or, break up.
This has been a great month for me. This has been a really good month for me, which is probably why I have the confidence right now, and I'm almost thinking I should act on it. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. cool. Okay. So financially, you're okay with it. Emotionally, it sounds like you're ready to kind of move on, or at least, bring it to a better, you're okay getting to a better place. The scenario that kind of first came to mind when you shared the rest of the detail was one where you go ahead and just buy yourself some time by letting her know about the maternity leave, and it's kind of like a take it or leave it situation, and then hopefully it would be natural attrition. And then that would buy you some time, and maybe during you'd have some clarity during that time. And then when you came back, you can maybe go to phase two, which would be like end it. Or let's just say something happened and you didn't want to do that, then you've hedged your bets. But yeah. What I'm hearing is, you know, you're in a spot right now where it makes more sense to just go ahead and let her know that you need to move on. You know, you can't, not that these are the exact words, but you can't afford to continue working at these levels. You're working with clients, you know, who are paying you three times as much or whatever. And, you know, really enjoyed working with her. It's been nothing personal. In fact, it's very difficult for you to write this, but you feel it's time. And then you get that off your shoulders, which I think is huge. And then there is a possibility that she'll say, well, you know, can we talk about this? We're willing to work with you on this.
Right.
And yeah. That's what I'm hearing, is that is probably where you are right now in the best course of action.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I think it's what you said initially was sort of my initial plan, you know, was to kind of, hedge my bets because of that whole thing where like, right now my plate's full, which is amazing with lots of great work, but yeah, then I'll have this little break and it's like, who will be on the other side of that? I don't know exactly. And, you know, I'm hoping obviously that all of my other clients will stay with me, but it would be, I don't know. It would be nice to know that I have at least this one, but at the same time, as I mentioned, this one client is, I put in, you know, probably three times as much work and make, you know, like not three times less the money or something, you know? So it's very much, maybe I need to just be kind of brave about it and take the second option, which is just to cut it off. And even if I come through on the other end of maternity leave with nothing, then it's just time to get back to it and try to earn new clients at the rates that I'm earning now.
Yeah, I mean, so it does require courage, but nothing great is going to happen if you don't take some bold, calculated moves.
Right.
And everything you're saying to me points to that.
Okay.
Listen, nature hates a vacuum. When you create that vacuum, it will be filled, and it will be filled with something better because you're in a different place right now than you were 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. So I think it's the time for courage is now, especially since you can afford it. And that's okay. That's one great hack is the fact that you're doing okay right now. Mm-hmm. I would go for it. Just like, you know, the time to make another follow-up call or email or check with a prospect is the moment you just landed a retainer deal or a great new client. That's not the time to stop and celebrate. That's the time to take advantage of this artificial high to go do bold, courageous things. So I would say this is an opportunity for you to do that. And I know you'll do it in a very cool, very respectful way that's not going to turn her off. And, you know, any reasonable person would understand. They might be disappointed, but they'll understand. And, you know, you never know. She might, 3-6 months, she might be in a different company and will say, listen, I'd like to talk to you again about working with me. This time I got a much bigger budget.
Yeah, that's possible. Yeah, that's very true. One thing that's interesting, I guess, about the maternity leave angle of it is I've been thinking about this, how with all of my other clients, you know, with my biggest client right now, I talked to her about it, and I've even built out a calendar to kind of reassure her that, like, on the other end of it, I am coming back. It's not like I'm falling off the face of the earth type thing, right? So mm-hmm. with everybody else, it's like, I'll be back. I'm having a baby. It's no big deal. Yeah. But with this, so it kind of feels weird to almost like use the baby as like a way to break up with her, because then it's like, I'm leaving, I'm having a baby, and I'm not coming back for you, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. That's like one little thing that feels a little odd. So that's why I was thinking about waiting till like maybe the end of the year, but then it's like, when I think about getting back to work with the baby, doing the work that I'm doing with her is something that makes me just feel a little bit of like drag, you know? So I guess that's a sign.
I agree. This is a time to reset.
Okay.
Hannah, it's time to hit the reset button. If you don't do it now, It's going to be in the back of your mind. This is the kind of, it's like that pebble in your shoe.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know what? Let's just stop right now and sit down, take the shoe off, and clear that pebble.
Okay.
You know, yeah, is the rest of the group going to keep walking without me? Sure. But, you know, I'll catch up to them. So, yeah, sometimes we don't want to stop and do it, but it creates this nagging sensation that just wears on us. So better to Jim Rohn used to have this quote. I love it. The pain of discipline is much lighter than the pain of regret. So it's like, you know what? Let's just do the thing we got to do because that's going to get us to a better place. And then we won't have this pain of regret later. And it applies to a lot of different things, but I think aversion applies here. It's like, it's better to just go ahead and do it now and get it over with. That's a very limited pain as opposed to this long drawn out, oh, what am I going to do? She doesn't know yet. I feel like I'm hiding something from her.
Yeah. Okay. So just kind of frame it as, you know, this is an exciting thing that's coming up, but I think it's also a good time to talk to you about, I don't know.
The transition is, this is what's happening. And, you know, as a result, I'm having to make some decisions.
Okay.
Significant decisions in my business that are very difficult. Part of that, you know, is I have to move on.
Okay.
I have to move on, and because I'm having to really call my client base, especially because of the fact that now I'm earning three times more with other clients, and you know, now the baby is going to throw a whole different set of complexities into my business. I'm having to simplify. I'm having to really cut back, and then without sacrificing my income as best as I can. So I think there's a natural way to explain that there that's not left up to her imagination.
So I should somewhat at least mention that it is related somewhat to budget. So that gives her the opportunity to come back.
Yeah. So that's the center of it.
Yeah.
Is you're trying to, and not that these are the words, you, because of this is forcing you to earn more in less time.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to do that when, you know, you're charging a third of what you're charging everybody else. And then that gives her, it's a reasonable explanation. It makes perfect sense. And it gives her an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm willing to budge a little bit here.
Okay.
As opposed to an ultimatum or just a final answer, like you didn't even get to say goodbye.
Right. Yep. That makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. So you see the transition there, or how to frame the argument?
Yes. That makes sense as a result.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to reinforce this is going to be huge change. You now have to figure out how to earn more in less time. Part of that is this. And I'm earning, you know, X amount more with other clients. As much as I love working with you, I can't continue to do this. Part of my change is going to have to be to move on.
Okay. And then as far as, you know, I, like I said, I can't refer her to another freelance writer that I know. I thought about just like sending her in the direction of Upwork, but it's almost like I don't want to necessarily send anybody over there. Cause it's like,
yeah. Well, one suggestion is, maybe, maybe not. Maybe if, one idea would be if you wanted to send me separately, privately, maybe some information on who they are, what they need, an idea on what you charge.
Yeah.
I do have a coaching group of newbies. Remember, this is all relative, right? To a newbie, that would be a dream come true. Now, assuming I had someone in one of my groups who has the credentials, has what it takes to do it, knows the business or whatever, then, that might make sense. But yeah, I agree. You know, like anybody in this group, you may not want to refer them, you know?
Yeah.
So just a yeah. Thought, if you wanted to, if you feel really bad about not referring someone, send me the info and, you know, I'll see if I have someone who maybe fits the description. I may not. You may also want to post that, you know, out there and or ask a few colleagues as well.
That's even that. Yeah, that's good to know. Even just having some kind of resource that I could potentially, you know, tap into to refer her, because yeah, like I said, she's not a bad person to work for. It's just, yeah, different stage. So, okay, great. That's a good idea, Ed. Thank you.
Okay, sure. Good luck. Let us know how it goes. I'm curious how it turns out.
Thank you. I will.
You're welcome. Okay. All right. Lisa has a question here. How to deal with a client who loves meetings and mostly needs support for chaos in her company. I want to be supportive, but I now have 8 hours of meetings not attached to specific projects that I can bill out. Ooh. Yeah. Hey, Lisa.
Hello.
Hello.
This is...
Man, meetings. Let's have a meeting about a meeting.
Well, I think it's a startup company. She came in as a marketing manager. She needs direction. She wants to talk out loud about what that direction is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't added strategy planning to the mix. This is the client that I'm doing a point system with. So I've assigned a certain number of points for each project. But so far, we haven't really identified which project she's going to do. So it looks like what we're ending up with are the little small projects, which are 2 or 3 points, which are, you know, 3, 500, whatever. And all of a sudden, it's like 8 hours assigned to that. That's like more than the project itself. So I can discuss that with her. I can tell her that, you know, I've got to charge the equivalent of a blog post or, you know, or two or something like that. But I'm just wondering if I should just absorb this and hope that there are bigger projects. And I've also got to really talk to her about what her budget is, because, you know, she keeps shying away from some of the bigger projects I suggest they need to do.
Okay. Well, so here's the thing. It's like, if you've already spent 8 hours, very difficult to get compensation for services already rendered, especially services that were not really clearly defined or anything like that. So try to recoup this. And I don't know if that's your main concern. I mean, I think I hear two concerns is, what do I do with this? I got 8 hours. I can't really build to a project. And then the other thing is, how can I put an end to this? You know, how can
that,
I?
That's the bigger issue, because I can, it's possible that I can absorb some of it.
Okay.
And I've talked to her about this before, but yeah, like yesterday, it was supposed to be a 1 hour meeting with three of us, and it went on for 2 hours. And I couldn't politely interject. You know, I had told her I had the morning, so I couldn't just say I have to leave until I finally did have to leave. But there's a lot of stream of conscious processing there that.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know how to be rude without being rude.
No, I don't think this is a rude thing. I think this is this is business, you know? I think think about any other profession, right? So my accountant, I pay them for very specific tangible things. File my quarterly taxes, do my payroll, do these other things, right? And of course, personal taxes every year, annually. But let's just say that, you know, gosh, I want to meet with you and pick your brain and just kind of talk through, you know, some of the things that I'm planning this year and see from a tax perspective what you think. And let's just say we had 2 or 3 meetings, some of them over the phone. Like, if he said, that's great, Ed, you know, I have a fee or a package for consultations or whatever, that wouldn't come off the wrong way, would it?
No, it wouldn't. And I kind of tried to build that in, but I started to with this point system I did. And then I thought, no, maybe I should backtrack and build that into the project. So I actually made the projects more expensive, figuring that would happen, not figuring that she'd come up with all these little tiny projects.
Yeah. So what you want,
when we first talked about it, the need for, you know, case studies and redoing the website and all of that are on the table. But
so here's what I would suggest, Lisa. I, I like using the 8 hours, like that kind of situation, as leverage.
Right.
Rather than try, because it is leverage in this way. You, let's just say you're charging, since you're in this point system, 1.4x and 3 points for this other type of project, 4 points and 7 points, et cetera, right? You could say, look, this planning and strategy and brainstorming. So, let's just say in that order, brainstorming, strategy and planning. It's going to be four units, 4 points per month. So you package it. That way it's something you're getting paid for. They're using some of their points that they've paid for.
Right.
Okay. You throw in the whole 8 hours thing. Listen, I've spent 8 hours on meetings for projects that weren't, one of these that were on the list. It's cool. I love working with you and I was happy to do it, but I can't continue doing that. I propose that that I include those things under this category, and it's going to be every month. We're just allot 4 points for that, and I will bill 4 points for brainstorming, strategy, and planning to determine what some of these things could be, and maybe things that are outside of that scope.
That makes perfect sense. Yes.
And then you'll feel good because we got something defined. I'll feel good because, this is out of scope. I've been happy to do it. It's fine. But it's gotten to a point where I can't sustain that. And that's where the leverage comes in.
Okay.
I just gave you this free stuff. I was happy to do it. It's kind of, I gave you these free food samples. But I can't feed your whole family all week, okay? I bought you dinner and I bought you breakfast the next day. That's cool. But, look, there's four of you and that's a lot of food. You got teenagers. That's the way to do it. I think any reasonable person would be okay with that. You may go back and forth on some of the details, but that's okay. You've now just started the discussion around this, and that's what really matters.
Yeah. That makes good sense. And I think she respects it. I think this may not be a great fit going on in terms of clients, but right now it's one of my only, so I'm not turning them away.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. It's a great learning experience. I mean, you're putting this point system into play and learning a ton. So.
Yeah. Well, the worst part was she agreed at the beginning of April. I sent the invoice. They hadn't paid it by last week. I said, "What's going on?" She said, "Oops, I forgot to hit send when I put it into a question for the accountant or whatever." So now she's trying to get me the money, and and she's been wavering on projects, so I can't go back. I mean, it's hard because it's like we didn't start anything. So a month is going by, mm-hmm. and I don't think I was clear enough about it being a retainer that I did say it was good for 60 months, but if they haven't paid it, when does this, 60 days.
60 days,
I don't know when the 60 days starts if they haven't approved it. So I've just sort of lost 3 weeks in this, and I'm hoping we'll make it up within the next 40 days or so anyway. But
so, I wouldn't, one thing I would do, Lisa, is I would take a few minutes, if you haven't already, a few minutes to think through, okay, what have I learned so far from this in terms of managing the client and staying on top of them when it comes to, managing the retainer and the points that I could apply, not just to this client, but for future ones.
Exactly. And I haven't worked with that many startups, so this may be, not, atypical. I mean, one of the biggest things is they really need to redo their website, but the marketing director can't really get a clear read on what it is they're really wanting to sell with their software platform. It seems to change every week. So,
And it could be, but I'm saying,
it's a good fit.
No matter what, it's still a great learning experience because you're going to come up with some ideas, what could I do? What about a weekly report? where it's like me checking in, letting them know, and then asking them, you know, for an update on their end. I don't know, you know, there's several ways of doing that, but it's, you definitely, I think now that you've seen it in action for 3 weeks, you have enough that you can say, okay, going forward, these are some things I think I need to do to make sure that we're all on track and on the same page.
Yeah. No, I think that's all really good. I mean, they've been a client since December and they've paid late every time, but they have paid. So there's potential there.
Uh-huh.
But if I had a choice, I'd probably move on. We'll see.
Sounds like they're on probation.
They're on probation.
Yeah. Okay.
let's keep working on getting better clients.
There you go. There you go.
Okay. Thanks. That's very helpful.
Oh, my pleasure. All right. So, guys, just want to do a quick check-in with you. I know Kelly has a question. I'm going to come right back to you, Kelly. But just curious, what's been most valuable so far in our discussion today? If you can let me know in the chat area, just type in capital V for valuable, and let me know. It could be something that we talked about, something that you heard from a conversation I had with somebody else. Always curious to see what's resonating with you guys. And while I'm waiting, Paul says, I can see Jacob twirling an imaginary mustache, evil genius style. I can see that too, Paul. You're right. some good feedback here on the maternity leave thing from Anna Carey. Yeah. Kelly, the point system... it's just a more advanced retainer agreement strategy. If it's something you want to explore, let me know. I can point you to it. I don't want to distract anyone, you know, or distract you if you're working on something else. But it's a way to take – it's a great approach to take with a client who you want to put on retainer or they want to put you on retainer. However, they don't have the scope of work clearly defined. If they're kind of making it up as they go, it's very ad hoc. In those kind of situations, it's very difficult to approach the retainer agreement the way I traditionally teach it. And this gives them an opportunity to buy, let's just say it, I mean, to buy your time, but without selling hours. So it really hides the whole hourly rate thing in a very clever way. But that's the type of client where it works best, is when they're kind of disorganized or following kind of a rapid prototyping approach to things. Joe says, most valuable so far, the email conversation, introductions, how, when to follow up, et cetera. Good. Okay. Patty says, working with competitors. Yeah. Anna says, for her, it's been how to talk to a competitor. That's another one. Carrie, I have a similar problem as Lisa with a client. I'm trying to manage her expectations, let her know I'll have X number of management hours per month. Excellent. Yeah, and even better, Carrie, is to, instead of saying X number of hours per month, because then that puts you in an hourly situation, you could say, you know, you could take an average of what you typically spend and then let them know this fixed dollar amount will cover, you know, meetings, conversations, planning, et cetera, for things that are not related to our current projects, right? That's better than saying, you know, you get so many hours at this rate, because then the focus ends up being on the hourly rate. Kelly says, valuable has been how to balance current clients and their prospective competitors. Man, that really struck a chord. I'm glad we talked about that. So thanks for bringing it up, Jacob. Hannah says, your encouragement to be courageous and move on from this client. Tips how to frame it in my email. Yeah. Curious. Okay, so you're now on hourly but trying to shift to retainer. Gotcha. Okay. Perfect. All right. So let me go back here to questions. Again, anytime if you got a question, just type in capital Q. Give me an idea of what you'd like to talk about. We can have a conversation. Kelly has a question here. Is one of the people who connected to me via LinkedIn asked right off about rates. I responded with that info and they nicely said it was too high. I expected that since they asked about it right off, but is there another tactic I can use in that situation? Yeah. Good question, Kelly. I can assure you, you're not alone here. Let me bring you in. Hey, how are you, Kelly?
Hi there, Ed. I'm doing great. How about you?
Doing well. Doing well. It's extremely common, right? We've all been there. Okay, how much do you charge? You're right. In most cases, I would say that's someone who is very price sensitive. But let's be real. Many times it's someone who just wants to make sure they can afford you at first, right? And we all do this in our own lives. You know, we're going to get the quote on doing some, I don't know, getting the house painted. We just want to know, you know, how much do you charge? The challenge too is that there's no relationship, so there's no trust yet. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, that's one of the easiest things to ask for, because it's very objective. Hey, how much do you charge? It takes the emotion out of the whole thing. The way around it, Kelly, is rather than say, I can't tell you, not that you would say this, but rather than say something to the effect of, I can't tell you, or just blowing them off as somebody who's not a good prospect, I always like to acknowledge that they've asked. And then let them know that you'd be happy to give them an idea, but you need to know a little bit more about their situation because you don't have an hourly rate and everything is custom. So it really depends. You quote a project based on the specifics of that engagement, of the situation, what they need. And every project is different. Okay. So now it's, think about like playing ball, right? You're the prospect. You contacted me, you threw the ball at me. Or think about it as a hot potato, actually. I think that's better. I'm throwing the hot potato back at you now by saying, it depends. I need to know a little bit more. You know, can we set up a brief 15-minute phone call so I can learn a little bit more?
Okay. Actually, I don't think that they had anything in mind. It was more of somebody that worked for them, contractor had referred me to them and they wanted to just link to me and then find out, you know, how much you pay, but I don't think that there was a actual project going on in there.
Gotcha. So yeah, there's nothing defined. They just want to get an idea of how expensive right. you are or how inexpensive or how affordable.
Yeah.
So, yeah, in those cases, I think the way to look at it, I would still respond with that. Like, it really depends. I don't charge by the hour. I quote every project individually. I would need to learn a little bit more about your situation or your project. Okay. And then I'd be happy to give you, you know, at least a range. And then it's great because they're holding the hot potato at that point. So they have to respond with something. Or they can choose not to, but if they respond, then they could, maybe the response was what you suspected. Well, we actually don't have anything right now, but you referred to us by Jim at over at ABC. And, you know, we might have something at some point. We're just curious, you know, what your fees are or what your rates are. And then now you have the hot potato and you could say, great. Well, thank you. I'm glad he referred me. Those are great guys. When you have something, you know, that you'd like to discuss, I'd love to have that conversation with you, and I'd be happy to give you, you know, a quote at that point.
Oh, okay, cool.
You see what I'm saying? It's like there's no point in getting into details until we have something tangible. Okay. You don't have an obligation to them, you know. People ask me about my coaching all the time. It's like, well, let me ask you a few questions, and then suddenly I find out that, oh, they're not even – they're months away from doing anything. They're just curious. Well, I tell you what, why don't we – that's great. Why don't we talk when the timing is better for you, and then we can have that conversation for two reasons. First of all, it doesn't really make sense to engage someone who's not – the timing is not right. And number two, my situation may have changed between now and then. So then I quote something, my fees go up, and then – now they're disappointed when they re-engage me.
Okay. Okay, gotcha. Do you think I should just, since she already said, well, that's too high, should I put her on a nurturing list just in case, or just let it go?
When did they respond saying that's too high?
Yesterday.
Oh, okay, so it's been recent.
Right, and her company is actually pretty big. It's like 1,400 people, so part of me feels like she said it was on the high end, which sounds like it's not unaffordable. It's just that, you know, she's price sensitive. So I was wondering if it might be worth putting her on a nurturing list or doing anything.
Are they in your target market?
B2B software, yeah.
Okay. I would, again, continuing with the hot potato metaphor, I would throw the hot potato at them and just ask them, hey, I respect that. What are you used to paying, or, you know, what did you have in mind?
Okay.
Something along those lines. Because I would want to know, and just hypothetically speaking, let's say that you gave them a range of $2,000 to $3,000, you know, or just, I know that you didn't get into a specific project, but, and then they say that's too high, and you say, okay, cool. Well, what are you used to paying, or what do you feel is reasonable, or what were your expectations? And they said $200 to $300, then you know you're way off, in which case they don't belong in your nurturing list.
Okay. Good.
You know, but if it's within reason, then that's cool. The other thing is, don't be afraid to respond with, hey, I respect that. You know, what are you used to paying, or what's your budget like? And then add something to the effect of, and by the way, let me just explain too, so it's not just a number. You know, I have this experience, or, you know, whatever, like Anna, for instance, I'll pick on her. So she's a dietitian. I mean, she's got all these credentials. She's got all this experience. If she were to quote just a number, and then they said the same thing, then she could ask for what's your budget? And then she could throw in all these credentials, not a whole list. She doesn't have to put her full resume in there, but she can explain. Let me explain the reasoning behind this. So that way the fee has context, because without context, it's just a number.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does. Thank you.
You know, whatever, like okay, so they're B2B software, but let's say they happen to be, supply chain management for distributors, and you've worked with a couple of supply chain management companies. You know, you kind of throw that in there. Right? So that way they know when you work with me, not just working with somebody who needs to all this hand holding and doesn't really understand the industry. Like, I get it. I understand that sector. I understand the players. I understand the business drivers.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. So now do you feel like you have something now when that happens? Because it happens to all of us, right? A good way for you to respond.
Yes, thank you. Because when it happened, I felt like giving her my info right off was not the right thing to do, but I couldn't figure out exactly what to do at that point, since it was all happening via LinkedIn rather than a phone conversation for a specific thing. So this really
yeah. Worked. No, that's cool. Hey, look, it's a learning experience. And, you know, just keep in mind one thing, Kelly, and this just goes out to everybody. It's not your job to be a quoting machine, right? So I think many of us, because we're used to serving clients, we're used to complying with requests. Don't be afraid to throw in some qualifiers in there, or to start a conversation and ask some follow-up questions in the process. Totally fine to do that. In fact, in a way, it positions you as a pro when you do that.
Okay.
Because nobody else is doing that. I can't tell you how many people, and I contact service providers all the time. Right away, they comply. And sometimes I wonder, like, wow, I'm surprised he didn't respond with a follow-up question.
Okay. Right.
Cool.
I see where he's coming from.
All right, Kelly. Let's see. Carrie has a question here. With my new client that I'd like to shift to retainer, how do I do that since she knows my hourly rate? I feel like it's all going to be about number of hours now. Oh, yeah. Good stuff. Let me bring you in. Miss Carrie. Hey, Carrie, how are you?
Fantastic. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good to finally talk with you live.
Yes, you too. Thank you.
All right. So I got some good training on that I can point you to, okay, that I think will give you more of the detail that will be even more helpful. A couple of points, though, that I should make. One is you're already doing the right thing in terms of retainers. I always say, look, don't propose retainers to clients you've never worked with before. Always should be existing clients, number one. So that's not an issue here. Number two, if you're coming from an hourly situation, going to the model that I teach, that's a difficult transition because they're obsessed, not literally, but they're fixated. They're already used to your hourly. And when you try to get their focus away from the hourly thing, most people have a hard time with that. They just do. Doesn't mean you shouldn't try. But my model is based on basically trying to determine a series of deliverables over a period of time, let's just say the next 6 months. Best guess, it's never going to be perfect. And then coming up with a monthly amount, many times it's going to be discounted. You're not going to itemize anything, okay? But you're going to discount it internally, number one. But more importantly, and this is key, Carrie, you have to lead with the benefit of, look, when you do this, you are at the front of the line now. It's the velvet rope treatment. You're now my top client. You get the fastest turnaround. I respond the fastest, and you're at the front of the line. That's what they're paying for. They're not paying for a discounted rate. So that's not going to work for everybody. You know, some people are just going to be obsessed over just hourly or how cheaply they can get it. I'm not saying that's them, but just keep that in mind. The way you kind of hide the whole hourly thing is there's so many items there over a 6 month period that it's going to be possible for them to figure out what you're netting on an hourly basis.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, and this particular client has used and fired three agencies in the past, and had retainers with all of them. So she did share with me the last retainer amount. I don't know what all the deliverables were per month, but it was she's already given me a bunch of deliverables and has already said that she would like to have me available on an as needed basis for emergency projects, which in the architecture world, that means it's a proposal that's due, you know, like tomorrow. So that's something I get an assignment at 4 p.m. in the afternoon and I'm up until 8 a.m. the next morning to finish it. No thanks.
Yeah. And by the way, how long have you been working with them?
So this, we're coming up on the end of our first month.
Okay. So it's new.
Yeah, it's brand new. She's pretty unorganized. She's incredibly frustrated in her role and has shared a lot of her internal baggage with me already.
Okay. And how do you feel about that, her baggage?
It's certainly understandable that I've had the role she's in right now. I've had that job before I went out on my own, so I can certainly empathize with her. So, I mean, it's fine. It'll be manageable. But she is a whirling dervish every time I see her.
Has she explained why she fired all these agencies?
Lack of responsiveness for one of them. One was a pre-bank agency that kept cycling her through account reps. Like she was getting new account reps like every 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
In the last one was another freelancer, and she just wasn't producing.
Gotcha. I always want to know, because I want to make sure that's typically a red flag. So I always wonder, okay, well, wait a minute. How could you possibly be, when it's one, I get it. When it's two, when it's three, I'm concerned. There's a lot of poor service out there, so I get it. You just need to know what the reasons are, because typically this is a trend, and, they're looking for a savior. And
right.
That's very
hard. And I think she also does not manage her workload very well. So I've seen that already with the deliverables she's asked me to do. And then because there wasn't clear explanations and not all the information was given and, all these other circumstances, now I'm going to have to go here in about 10 minutes to go pick up one of the print jobs and take it to her. And it was supposed to be done last week.
Well, based on all that, I mean, how do you feel about working with somebody like this on a retainer basis?
I feel like once we get over the hump and I can help her get organized, I think it can work. And I think they'll be the type of client that really values the outside expertise and the direction and the service. So I think there's some positives there, but I think it could be a really steep climb over the next couple of months.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it sounds like you're willing to look at ways to make it work, which is good. So this is not like a heck yes or a heck no necessarily. Let me do this. I'm going to just put it in the chat area, Carrie, a direct link to this retainer agreement training.
Okay.
And take a look at that. And I think it's going to answer a lot of your questions and help you avoid some of the biggest pitfalls. There's a lot of safety features in that system that will not lock you in anything that you're going to regret or them. So there's a lot of risk mitigation features in there that could help.
Perfect. That's really, I think, the crux of it. You just hit it on the head, is mitigating a lot of the risk that I see with this.
Yeah, totally. So take a look at that. I think that will help. I just wanted to check in your intention first. I think your intention is, that you're willing to give it a go. And I would go through that and then put something together and see.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. And keep me posted.
Yeah, well, the real test is going to be here in another week when I remit my first invoice.
Okay, there you go. Let's see if they pay.
How that goes.
Yeah, okay. Well, good luck.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. All right, let's see a question here from Hannah. I saw your video response to Ruthie about pricing projects outside of XYZ deliverables. You talked about internal hourly rate plus 20%. Can you talk a bit about value pricing? Okay. Yeah. So value pricing, let me bring you in, Hannah. Hey, Hannah, you're back on.
Hey.
Do you want me to just give you kind of a quick overview or definition, or what element would be helpful?
I suppose I've heard bits and pieces probably on different podcasts and different articles about, so I think this is what it is. I'll say what I think it is, and then you can correct me or steer me in the right direction. Basically, you look at what the potential client would be getting out of the whatever it is you're producing for them, and then you price your rate based on that. So if it's something that's going to maybe earn them like $100,000 or something, you can charge more for it than if it was like a blog post or something. What do you think?
Yeah, that's essentially, it's based on the value of what you're delivering. But the one thing to keep in mind is a lot of writers freak out about that. Well, I don't know what the value is. I'm writing content that doesn't directly lead to sales. At some point it does, but how do you determine that? Keep in mind that value can be defined in many different ways. And here's where it gets really confusing. There's value in terms of, you know, we just talked about risk mitigation. And look, when you work with me, you lower the risk that something's going to go wrong. You lower the risk of having to work with somebody you have to handhold, somebody who doesn't come through. You know, remember my conversation with Kelly.
Yeah.
We can throw some things in there about, yeah, you know, I mean, sure, you can work a lot of people who are charged less, but, you know, what's the risk there to you? What's the risk to a marketing director of working with a writer who, you know, they're taking 3 weeks to write this big white paper, for example, and then when they finally send in the first draft, it's like way off. I mean, the kind of way off that they just, all the blood drains out of their face and they're like panicking now. Like, oh my gosh, this is so messed up, right? What is the cost of getting that right? You know, the price, I should say, of having that right. So there are a lot of elements to it. It's certainly not a science, okay?
Yeah.
But I think for us, since we are not working necessarily with hard numbers, we're not in a, most of us don't, are not doing direct response copywriting, for example. Mm-hmm. We can directly quantify what you brought to the table. The key is to, this is what I try to do, is to get them to sense the value of working with somebody who knows these things, has this experience, has these credentials. So there's the value side. And then here's the cost avoidance or risk avoidance side. When you work with me, you know, we're going to avoid all these things. When you do it like that, this 1-2 punch of here's value and here's risk avoidance and problem avoidance, that's a very powerful combination. And then you don't really have to get into the numbers in terms of like that's a 10x kind of situation or the ROI would be X, because nobody's going to believe that.
Right.
So the way I like to do it is through the conversation, the discovery call. You know, for those of you who've gone through my how to qualify prospects training, I'm starting to call that business therapy. So when I redo that training, I'm basically not going to change the process as much as I'm going to change the what I call it. Because when you go through those questions with a prospect, you're asking them things that most people don't ask them. Mm. And it's like them sitting on that therapist couch, just spilling things out on the table, just like, ah. And then they feel like you understand them, and then you show them that you do. And then when you present your quote, you're presenting not just a number, but you're presenting the context and what matters to them and why this is aligned with what they're trying to achieve and why it's really the best, smartest choice. And that is a flavor of value-based pricing. Because then you don't have to charge, oh, but the market is $200 a post. Screw the market. First of all, there's no market, number one. And number two, you don't have to follow, you know, the pack. You're saying, here's what I'm going to give you. Here's why. Here's what it's going to cost you. And here's why that's worth it. Now, does it mean that everyone's going to say yes? No. But it's gonna be attractive to the right kinds of clients. So I know I just didn't give you like an exact answer there, but did that help you kind of better understand the reasoning or the philosophy behind it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, which is kind of, it is sort of a nice almost relief because yeah, it is kind of hard to quantify. It's like almost an estimate as to what they could potentially earn off of what you write for them. So it did seem a little strange to me, but I knew there was something to it. So that's helpful. Basically just listening to them and finding out exactly what they need and what problem you can solve for them and presenting it in that way so that the value of what you're offering is more clear than just, sure, I can write whatever you want me to type thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. One metaphor, this is kind of a strange one, but I don't know why I keep coming back to it, is I always think of like, I want to ask some questions that's going to force them to take things out of their pocket and put it on the table. So we're sitting across from each other on facing this table, facing each other, but there's a table in between us. And they're taking all this stuff out of their pocket and they're putting it on the table. Once everything's on the table, then I can take things out of my pocket and put it on the other side of the table. That way they can compare value with cost.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that.
You know, and sometimes there is a way you can talk about it in terms of numbers, but it's still not going to be scientific. For instance, sure, you're going to pay me $6,500 for this white paper. And I know it sounds like you've paid four before. I get it. But let's talk about what the average sale is for you guys. And you told me that it was between $500,000 and $750,000. And that the, you know, what you've been producing has been missing the mark in these areas. Here's why that's not going to happen when we work together. Here's what I can give you, and here's why it's going to, you know, hit the mark. And yeah, there's a bit of a difference, but I mean, if it can make an impact on just one prospect that turns into a client, you know, will that make a difference? So those situations are so exaggerated that you just need to get their focus away from this thing, take their focus away from the $2,000 price difference, and focus it on what really matters.
Mm-hmm. And then for myself, sort of for how to approach pricing with that in mind, I guess it's sort of a matter of, because what I'm doing right now is I'll get to a level with writing something, and then so every time I quote, I'll, you know, try to ask for a little bit more. Because it's like, I know I'm really good at this, and I know I always get, you know, whatever, people are happy with what they get. So it's just a matter of almost like justifying it to myself too, a matter of like, okay, I know I'm bringing value here because I'm listening to them. I know I'm going to give them what they need. So it's okay to ask for this much and then this much. And then that's sort of how you get to that earning more.
Absolutely. And this is going to, I know you just got your game plan. How to raise your fees. Yeah. I explain that in more detail.
Oh, cool.
But a lot of this struggle that we all have, you guys need to understand that that's something that's going on in your head, mm-hmm. and it's not necessarily the reality for the person you're talking to. Never shop with your wallet, meaning never, well, this is a lot to me. It seems like a lot to me, so it must be a lot to them. You never know where they're coming from. And be careful about the assumptions you make. And yes, keep raising your fees until the resistance you're getting is significant over time. Raise them incrementally, because what happens psychologically is you create a new normal for yourself every time you do, and that it gets accepted.
Yep.
So when you go from 2,000 to 2,500, and a couple of prospects accept that, your new normal is now $2,500, even if you've been charging $2,000 for the past year or two. So now the third time you quote $2,500, or let's say at that point you decide to quote $2,750, that doesn't seem like a lot. You're not as scared.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it sounds scary when we talk about these things. It's like, oh my God, you know, am I going to like hit a wall? But when you think about it incrementally like that, you can start understanding how, yeah, I just told you to get off your couch, and I didn't say run, you know, 10 kilometers. I told you to get off your couch and walk around the block, right? The couch to 10K concept.
Mm-hmm.
You do that for a week, and now walking around the block is nothing. Once you have that as a habit, or that's the new normal, then if I tell you to walk around two blocks or two laps, that's not a big deal. And eventually you get to 10 kilometers. So it's the same idea.
Hmm. And then as far as, so part of what Ruthie was talking about on Facebook was basically pricing for, because something we've talked about a lot in this group is trying to move away from definitely hourly, and then even trying to get past the idea of, you know, exchanging deliverables for money, and getting to more of that strategy level and being more of a resource for your client. And mm-hmm. so pricing, because it is like, I am getting to a point now where I'm quite comfortable quoting deliverable rates and even increasing them and seeing good results there. So that's great. But I would like to get to where I am able to pitch the other, you know, the strategy end of it, the sort of more intellectual resource. And so I don't remember now if your video covered it, but any tips on that? Like, how do you price that? Like your intellectual pitching in every month type thing. Is that just part of the hourly, figure out how many hours you're going to devote internally and then add 20% for a buffer and that type of thing?
You could. So that video that you're pointing to, I just offered some lower stress ways of coming up with that.
Yeah.
And I would start there.
Okay.
Definitely start there because it gives you something that you can wrap your arms around. But to answer, I think the concern that you're not really giving me, but I sense it, mm-hmm. is how will I get there?
Yeah.
Right? It's like I'm like in this world where it's all about individual deliverables. I want to do more strategy and planning. It makes perfect sense, but how will I get there? And it's kind of a different flavor of what we just talked about, which is, you know, you're here in the middle, and the way you're looking at it, probably, I'm not going to guess, is that you're seeing that as being in this outer ring. And it's like, man, that is a big jump. I don't even know. It scares the heck out of me. Am I even qualified? And let's just say this is strategy, right?
Yeah.
And right now, most of what you're doing is just very tactical. How do you make that leap? And the answer is that you do it one step at a time. This happens in a very organic fashion, more organic than you might think. So you're here. What you're going to do is you're going to come across and it's usually going to be with an existing client where you see an opportunity to help them with some strategy and some planning, not just the deliverables, the pieces. And suddenly you've moved to this new level, this playing field. Or I should say you've expanded your playing field. And then with that, you're going to be working with another client where you see an opportunity to help them. And now you have the confidence to talk specifics. With the other client before, the one in orange, I mean, you were kind of making it up as you went with their help. And they knew, and they were okay. They trusted you. They liked you. But now you have something here you can talk to them about and say, I work with this client, and we actually did this and that and the other. Right? You know, we should probably do something similar because I think your situation is the same or close to it. So now you've moved not just from here, but you've moved here. And then, and you see where I'm going with this, is you finally get to, you know, a higher level. So the way to get there is, you know, start where you are right now. Expand your playing field. That's going to give you the confidence you need to then expand it further. And eventually, you're working here. It doesn't mean you're not doing writing. It just means that you're offering different packages, different solutions. You don't know what those are right now, so I wouldn't worry or stress too much about them. The answers will appear.
Okay.
And it's probably going to start with, hey, you know, when I did this, when I had this experience, I learned these things. And next time I'm going to, instead of just winging it, I'm going to propose, you know, three options. Two of them have strategy built into it and they're packages, for example. So now you're introducing tiered pricing. You're including some strategy bundled in with it and some planning. And then they take you up on that. As you work with them, you realize what works and doesn't work with the one they took you up on. Let's say it was this one. And you modify all of them. And then that positions you or puts you in a better place to then really do this in a more formal way. Does that make sense?
It makes so much sense. Yes. And I think, yeah, I'm at a point right now where I'm in the tactical zone, but with this one retainer client I have right now, she's kind of doing a rebrand, and she was like asking my advice on landing page. She was like, how do I do, can I have you look at this landing page and give me your thoughts? Maybe I can pick your brain. So that's that transition phase, right? That's where I'm starting.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay. And then later I'll know how to maybe bring that to someone else, and then I can actually formalize it. Okay, this is making so much sense. I love this. Thank you, Ed.
Yeah, absolutely. That's, you know, doesn't mean that you may not find an opportunity to kind of skip a level here at some point, but if that happens, great. But just tell yourself, look, relax. It's just going to happen gradually. Just be on the lookout for opportunities, which is sounds like what you are doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. Thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. All right, guys. So let's go ahead and wrap up. And what I'd love to know is, let me get the slide up. So you already told me about takeaways, but you know, you shared what you found valuable up until a certain point. I'd love to wrap up with your top takeaway and your top action item. So if you wouldn't mind going to the chat area, typing in a capital T for a takeaway. That you got from this conversation, whether it was with you or with somebody else that I had the chat with, and capital A for your top action item. These calls are called momentum calls for a reason. I want to make sure you leave with at least one actionable item, even if it's something really, really simple that you're going to act on over the next week or two. So let me know, T for takeaway, A for action item. I know many of you had to leave, but for those of you who are left, I'd love to know what came up for you. Lisa says, takeaway, add monthly meeting time to my point system. Excellent. Anna says, there is no secret to how to follow up. For takeaway and action items, send more warm emails and follow-ups. Good stuff. Hannah, pay attention and look for opportunities for strategy. Yeah. Lisa, same as above. great. Kelly, top takeaway, increasing rates and service bundles incrementally can reduce stress. No doubt. Yes. Erica, top action item, write rough draft of web content. No excuses. There you go. You just wrote it down, Erica, so no excuses. Joe, top takeaway, how to bring up uncomfortable topics with clients. And top action item, continue to work on my new website copy. Yeah. Great. Patty says, top takeaway, develop a bundling approach for strategy work. And that's an action item as well for her. Great. And Hannah, action item, get into my refresh action plan. Kelly says, top action item, finish off the content multiplier training. Good stuff. Good stuff, guys. Hey, some good conversations today. Love the diversity of topics as usual that we have here. And the fact that something that, you know, somebody else might be asking would be just as valuable to you in many cases as whatever you came to the call with if you brought something in. I know I always learn something from these conversations, even regardless of whether or not I come into it with a question. So I hope it's the same for you. We'll continue these conversations, of course, in the Facebook group. And I will talk with you guys again real soon. Take care, everybody. Have a great rest of the day.